The lawyer Stephen Donziger stepped out onto 104th Street. He looked west toward Riverside Park and east toward Broadway. The dark sedans had been tailing him for at least a month now. They followed him for blocks at a time, slowing when he slowed, stopping when he stopped, their passengers watching his every move. Donziger lived on a quiet block on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. He worked from home, a two-bedroom apartment he shared with his wife, their 5-year-old son, and a Cocker Spaniel. Photographs and artwork from Latin America adorned the apartment. Documents in cardboard boxes surrounded the dining table. In the narrow foyer, stacks of stapled legal filings competed for space with a mud-spattered mountain bike. On this morning, in the spring of 2012, Donziger had wheeled the bicycle down the hall to the elevator and across the marble-floored lobby. 50 years old, he dressed like a graduate student, in jeans, unironed button-down shirt, and tattered jacket. ¿Cómo estás? He asked the doorman as they bumped fists.
Bien, muy bien, señor.
Then Donziger had emerged from the building and, as was his habit, searched for the dark sedans. 6'4" and powerfully built, he would not have been difficult to track. Sometimes, in addition to the cars, he thought he saw men on foot, pretending to peer into store windows if he looked their way. Donziger began pedaling toward Ocean Grill, a seafood restaurant where he did business over lunch. As he approached the corner, he glanced over his shoulder in time to see the large car pull out of its parking space and fall in behind him. He didn't fear actual physical harm. The company was too smart, he thought, to turn him into a martyr. It wanted to distract him, intimidate him. He despised his corporate foes, their money, their influence, their cynical disrespect for his clients in the Amazonian rainforest of northeastern Ecuador. The company would never willingly pay what it owed. Its lawyers and lobbyists had said as much. Now they were coming after him, making it personal. He'd written down license plate numbers, but the police weren't interested. Every day people killed each other in New York. What did he expect the police to do about cars that might or might not have been following him? The surveillance wasn't his main worry. A year earlier, in February 2011, the company had sued him. The 193-page suit, filed under the federal anti-racketeering statute, alleged that he had ginned up fraudulent evidence as part of a conspiracy to extort the company. A federal judge had taken the accusation seriously. The judge forced him to turn over his hard drives, email, and boxes of documents. Donziger had said some truly dumb things. He admitted that much. And now they were public. His bravado sounded incriminating, he also acknowledged, especially if it was taken out of context. He'd cut a few corners, used tactics they didn't teach back at Harvard Law School. He could lose his law license. Conceivably, the U.S. Attorney's Office could bring criminal charges. The company, as Donziger saw it, fought dirty. He fought back in kind. Slugging it out, he'd pulled off something amazing. His ragtag team had gone to a provincial Ecuadorian courtroom and won a judgment that mighty Texaco had ruined the lives of thousands of farmers and Amazon tribesmen. Because of him, a tiny third world nation had spoken truth to power. Donziger had pressed the case for nearly 20 years now, beginning as the most junior member of the plaintiff's legal team and ultimately rising to field commander. Before going after Texaco, which was acquired in 2001 by Chevron, he'd never brought even a slip-and-fall suit. That he'd survived this long must have shocked the oil company and its lawyers. No wonder they were branding him a racketeer and prying into his personal life.